Tickets. I'm actually leaving for the airport very soon, after I finish speaking. So I've been told that Anamali Pandit has also selected a few other speakers to speak after me because I won't be able to speak that long. Well, that's the way at least things happened, particularly today. It wasn't so easy to change my ticket, and it's an international ticket. Om Gyanati Bhanda Sura Gyanati Sadakaya Kaksho Mandini Namaya Tasmai Shri Yudhaya Namaha Ukam Padoti Vacharam Pankam Pradaya Tehundi Yapki Patama Vade Shri Yudhaya Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vupadaya Shrimate Bhakti Vidhanta Swami Tijani Namaste Saraswati Devi Vodavani Kachari Nirvishesha Sanyavani Vastachari Sakari Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Vaidya Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Vodavatarina Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Before I begin speaking, I thought it would be appropriate to first read from Srila Prabhupada's Markandeya Bhagavad Dharma, which is a poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote here in Boston Harbor in 1965 when he first arrived in the United States on his long journey, which is partially shown on our monument, from Calcutta to the United States. He had come here at the request of his spiritual master to bring Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. Srila Prabhupada did not have a fixed plan of what he would do, but he knew that the Lord wanted him to be here because he had the order of his spiritual master. And he wrote a very beautiful prayer, praying to the Lord to please give his words the potency so that people will be able to understand his transcendental message. And just as it says on the monument, by who could make me a success or failure, the decision is up to you. At the written, I was looking at that right on the monument today. That was Srila Prabhupada's mood. Always, we oftentimes speak about that when we speak about Srila Prabhupada, that he's an acharya, he's a teacher by example. But one of the most important principles he taught by his example as an acharya was how to always think yourself to be fully dependent on the will of the Lord and always subordinate to the will of the Lord and always simply desiring to be an instrument in the hands of the Lord and his spiritual master, and teaching Bhagavad Gita by his life by demonstrating that he was always ready to accept whatever Krishna willed, whatever Krishna desired. But all he knew is that he wanted to have the opportunity to serve. And because he was always conscious of his subordinate position, he was never proud, puffed up, and never thinking himself to be the proponent of spreading Krishna consciousness to the Western world. But he always gave credit whenever he would speak to his followers and speak to others. He was always very specific to make it clear that whatever has ever manifested by the results of my efforts is only because I'm a servant of my divine grace, is divine grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And it is by his desire that whatever we see manifest here in the West, and to speak of in the West, but throughout the whole world, is a result of his desire. And if he didn't have that desire, and if I didn't have the opportunity to serve that desire, then Prabhupada was thinking that none of this would have been possible. And I would even oftentimes reflect on one of Srila Prabhupada's lectures when he was sitting, speaking to his followers with tears in his eyes, crying, saying that my spiritual master has sent all of you to help me to serve his order. That was his mood. That was his mood. And his prayer in the Boston Harbor that he composed before he even stepped off the Jaladutta was illustrative of that mood that he had. And therefore I spoke this short introduction simply to try to create the mood for his mood. Because if we have the right mood for his mood, then we can hopefully capture the spirit of what he came to teach as an acharya, how we, as his servants, can actually be successful in whatever we do in spreading Krishna consciousness and whatever we do in trying to serve his mission. Our success is fully dependent upon his desire and ultimately Krishna's decision, which are all very much the most important factors in anything that's done in Krishna consciousness. That's what Srila Prabhupada taught, and that's the message that we understand from the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. It's the same message that Krishna spoke to Arjuna, and it's the same message that Arjuna demonstrated by his own example, that after hearing Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna understood that he was supposed to be simply an instrument in Krishna's plan, and Krishna already had a plan. And either I can take part in the plan, or I don't take part in the plan. But because Krishna wants it, it will happen. And one of the things that Krishna wants is he always wants to please his pure devotees. That is one of his consistent qualities that's understood to be one of his greatest qualities. It's the Bhakta Vatsalya. It's described as the emperor of all of his qualities. Is that he's very much inclined to please and to uphold the words of his pure devotees. And that means that when someone like Srila Prabhupada prays in his prayer on the Markandeya Bhagavatam, that he prays that I am simply a puppet in your hands. If you wish these people to hear your message, then they will be here by your wishes. And he says, because I'm a puppet in your hands, I cannot do anything independent from your will. And therefore Prabhupada prays, as we'll read, please make me dance, make me dance, make me dance as your life. This was his mood. So I wanted to read a little bit of the whole Markandeya Bhagavatam. And then with whatever time I have, I'll speak a little bit more on the topic. And then speak about a little bit about the significance of what we just observed before coming into the temple by establishing this monument here on the front of 72 Commonwealth Avenue. I think it's something that's very significant, and I would like to share my thoughts about that as well. So I don't have time to read Bengali, but I'll read the English. Srila Prabhupada, again, remember Prabhupada wrote this on the boat in Boston Harbor in 1965. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? It's funny, little joke, but when the devotee who designed these monuments was coming up with the things that he wanted to put on the monument, you know, and I know the devotee very well. In fact, he was my secretary, and he was working closely with one boy, Vladimir, who was actually the sculptor of this monument from Kiev, Ukraine. He's actually a public, he's sculpted many public monuments for the city of Kiev in Ukraine. And he's a devotee. In fact, he did a sculpture of the mayor of Kiev, and very close with the mayor. Maybe you may have heard of him. He's a famous world famous boxer. His name was Vladimir Klitschko. And he's already renowned. He's very young. He's only 24 years old, but very accomplished. And when my secretary was coming up with what should we put on a monument, he said, I was thinking, maybe we should put, I guess you have some business here, otherwise why would you bring me to this terrible place? You should have apologized for it. And I said, you're joking, aren't you? Yes, I am. I can imagine the mayor of Boston coming, didn't come to the installation of our monument. But one of the things I want to say is that I definitely suspect that people will come. I want to talk about that a little bit later. Anyways, so Prabhupada says in his Markandeya Bhagavata, but I guess you have some business here, otherwise why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I do not know how they will be able to understand you. But I know your causeless mercy can make everything possible because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. And then Prabhupada says, I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation, and if a sober person repeatedly receives it with submissive oral reception, then he will be able to understand your message. And then he quotes several verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. I won't quote them due to my limited time. But the essence of the verses is that how Sri Krishna, who's the super soul in the heart of all living beings, he cleanses within the heart, he cleanses the heart of everyone from within their heart who develops the urge to hear his messages when they are properly heard and chanted. He cuts away the knots of their attachment. Now Krishna, who's the super soul in the heart of everyone, he acts from within the heart of everyone. When someone simply develops a desire to hear his messages when properly spoken, properly presented, it's the essence of the verses that Srila Prabhupada quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Prabhupada says, he will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or a failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message, so if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, you will certainly feel enlightened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands, so if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance over and make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated September 18th of 1965. So, as we said, it's clear how Prabhupada was thinking. He didn't write this just out of course, his humility was one definite significant factor. His humility is that he didn't think himself qualified. He even said that, I have no qualification whatsoever for executing that which you wished me to be done, because you brought me here for this purpose. And Prabhupada actually explains in many places in his teachings that one of the qualifications of a successful teacher of Krishna consciousness, or a successful servant of the spiritual master of the Lord, is that he never thinks he's qualified. If he thinks he's qualified, then he runs the risk of thinking that I'm doing this. Although Krishna very clearly states in Bhagavad Gita, Prakate Kriyamana Nigunai Pamani Savasha, that the bewildered soul under the influence of the three modes of material nature, he thinks himself the doer of activities, which are in actuality carried out by material nature. That is one of the symptoms or characteristics of what Prabhupada oftentimes coined as false ego. False ego means to think that I'm the doer. Real ego means that I'm a servant of Krishna. One who's captivated by this sense of false ego, when he sees something manifest about him and he sees it, he thinks that the good results are coming, false ego immediately dictates to that person to think, oh, look what I've done. And then, of course, what comes along with that is, of course, a sense of pride. And one of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna instructed Arjuna was to overcome this obstacle, this impediment for spiritual life, by being conscious of one's subordinate position. And therefore, Krishna's emphasis was Sarvadhamma Pritya Jama Mekam Sharanam Raja Tam Sarvapapiro Moksha Shami Masucha. He says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me, and I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. Masucha, I do not fear. He was telling Arjuna in this very important verse of Bhagavad Gita that don't be proud, don't think yourself the doer. You should execute this responsibility, this duty you have, because it is my desire, and yours to be an instrument in the execution of my desire. The other night we spoke about Krishna's manifestation on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when he showed Arjuna his universal form, and in that universal form, Arjuna saw so many wonderful things manifesting before him. He saw everybody, he saw all the soldiers on the battlefield, he saw everything in creation, he saw the universe, and then he saw, in his manifest in the universal form, he saw all those who were assembled on the battlefield entering into the mouth of the universal form, and how they were all being consumed, swallowed up by the universal form. And of course it was a very ghastly vision that the Lord revealed, and Arjuna said, after some time after seeing that, he said, please can you show me your other form? Prabhupada, in one story, when he was speaking about the universal form of the Lord, He gave the example of like a child whose father is a policeman. He says, a child whose father is a policeman, he has a particular relationship with his father. His father, when he comes home, his father always comes, picks up the child, holds him, embraces him. He said, but his father's also a policeman. So if the father comes home shooting guns in the presence of the child will really think, doesn't want to see his father like that. So in the same thing, Arjuna saw Krishna in his universal form is like the child seeing his father coming home shooting his guns as a policeman. He was thinking, oh, please, enough's enough. Please pick me up and hold me at your embrace. So the point was that Krishna told Arjuna, he said, the next thing he said after Arjuna saw this form, he said, Kalosmi, he said, I am time, and I've come to devour everyone in this world in the form of time. He told Arjuna that actually everyone will always, already, they are being killed, because everyone in this world is killed by the influence of Kalarupa, they're being swallowed up by the time factor. So, yet, those who've assembled in this battle, you have a duty to execute your duties, and who assembled in that battle, you have your duties to protect religious principles, you have your duty to establish your brother, Yudhisthira Maharaj, as emperor of the world, because if Yudhisthira Maharaj is established as the emperor of the world, then righteousness will prevail, the people will be happy, they'll be properly ruled, and the Kauravas who are trying to usurp the kingdom, they have to be punished because of their letting down the hair of Draupadi. And punishment was also their due lot for what they had done to Draupadi. So many factors had to be taken into place, into consideration. And Krishna was trying to convince Arjuna, just do your duty and fight, and don't be attached to the results. That's the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. I mean, there's so many more instructions are there. But it's essentially Krishna wanted Arjuna to give up his sense of false ego, thinking that not to think himself, falsely to think the doer, but to actually simply to become an instrument in the hands of the Lord and to execute the Lord's will, whose purpose is always all good absolute. Whatever purpose the Lord does, it's always everyone who gave up their bodies in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they actually achieved the mukti, sarupya, mukti. They got spiritual forms in the spiritual world. They're being killed in the presence of the Lord. So the Lord, whatever he does, even if he personally kills, we were reading about this morning, a long story, we can't go into all the details, we're already running out of time. But essence is how to become free from false ego. And one of the ways to become free from false ego is to think that I am a servant. And not to think that by my qualification, whatever is manifesting is simply due to my qualification. But if I'm a servant, that means I have a superior instruction I've been given. And because it is the will and the desire of my superior to see that manifest, it is his desire which is the actual cause of whatever, anything that manifests favorably. And anything that manifests favorably is a result of his desire, and if anything manifests unfavorably, it's the result of my foolishness. This is how a devotee thinks. So, Prabhupada embodied that mood. I mean, he was always conscious of this way, but not only because he was thinking that way out of his genuine humility, but he was teaching his followers that this is how his movement can become either a success or failure. He's already shown he was successful. There's no illusions about whether Srila Prabhupada was successful or not successful. If you look according to calculations, and you see what he accomplished in the short years from 1965 to 1977, establishing over 100 temples throughout the world, establishing farms, establishing millions of books being translated, and not only translated and published and distributed, and initiating thousands of followers, and impregnating the Krishna consciousness culture into the Western world, which prior to that was a mystery for most Westerners. The word Hare Krishna was not very well known. But Srila Prabhupada brought the word Hare Krishna, practically speaking, into every home. And it's through his books and through his beating of his mridanga and his kirtans and his distribution of his books. And it all started right here in Commonwealth Pier in Boston, when he appeared on this soil in 1965. And his success is obvious of what he's accomplished. So, therefore, his followers should be thinking how to preserve Srila Prabhupada's success. This is how any genuine follower of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada should be thinking, how to preserve Srila Prabhupada's success. The Krishna consciousness movement should become, continue to spread. Well, Prabhupada has already said in his prayer, you deliver them. There's a lot of living entities in the Western world that Prabhupada was thinking about when he said, you deliver them. And he wants them delivered. And Krishna wants to uphold the words of his pure devotee. So everyone who understands the heart of Srila Prabhupada and his mission, they know the weight of the responsibility on their heads. Yes, it is the duty of the follower to preserve the success of the spiritual master. It is the duty of the follower. The spiritual master's success is, in Srila Prabhupada's case, is already self-evident. But we should let that success prevail, and we should work very hard to see that it prevails by following his mood, which he taught by his example, and by hearing his instructions, and by remembering his personality. Oftentimes I emphasize to devotees, the devotees don't really know, many devotees do not know enough of who Srila Prabhupada is. You know, they come to Krishna consciousness, they read his books, they hear lectures, they hear his followers. But many of them are really, unfortunately, clueless about what Srila Prabhupada had to do to establish Krishna consciousness in the West. Of course, Prabhupada Lilamrita is such an important book for helping us to understand it. It is the duty of his followers also to help others understand. But not only do we have his instructions, not only do we have his example as Acharya, but we should also look at his example and see what he did, the austerities he had to undergo to spread Krishna consciousness. It wasn't handed to him on a silver platter. Two heart attacks on the Jaladuta on his way to America. It wasn't all handed to him and say, okay, you know, I'm going to serve my spiritual master Krishna just and say, okay, here. No, he struggled. And if you read Prabhupada Lilamrita, if you read his early letters that he wrote in 1965, sometimes he was thinking, how can I go on? The difficulties he had to endure. You know, he was living in New York City, and he'd never seen snow before. All he had was his little Swami hat and a little jacket. And he was staying in some flat where there wasn't even an appropriate shower, and he had to go out every morning for showering and cooking. He had to walk in the snow in such difficult conditions. And he had his manuscript stolen, and so many obstacles that were there. I mean, we could spend an afternoon just listing the different obstacles he had to hurdle in order to simply establish Krishna consciousness in the West. So it wasn't just handed to him. But he was confident. That's one of the symptoms of devotional service, is endeavoring with confidence. Although there's obstacles, he was confident that I can be successful because my spiritual master wanted it. So this we should try to learn and to understand when commemorating today's event of what Srila Prabhupada had to undergo, not only coming to the West, but that the 12 years that he spent from 1965 to 1977 in spreading Krishna consciousness in the Western world and planting firmly impregnating Krishna culture into the Western world and instructing so many of his followers to preserve. He said, I've given you the framework, now you fill it in. And he always very carefully said, always telling us, do not concoct. I've given you the basics. Do not concoct. Simply follow what I've given. So, I've spoken a little bit longer than I already expected to speak. But I felt that establishing these points was preserving the mood that Srila Prabhupada established in the Markandeya Bhagavatamrita. And the other thing that I wanted to say just is that as I was thinking today, as I was looking at this monument, there was a lot of austerities that I also had to go in establishing this monument. It was first brought here in, I mean, was it 2 years ago?
2 years
ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. And now we did the installation ceremony. And I was thinking that, yes, what a preaching facility this monument is. I mean, if you walk down Commonwealth Avenue, there's a lot of monuments, different places, and you read below what this person did, and how he's recognized, and you get a little sense of why this monument was put there. And people walk down Commonwealth Avenue, and they actually look at different monuments, and they study historical history of Boston. But actually, when you think about it, where do you have a monument that has right in front of it a big facility to tell everybody what the monument's all about? I mean, we've made a statement today. And the statement, I hope everybody understands, is the statement is, by establishing this monument on Commonwealth Avenue, where people are walking by, and I see people walk and look at this monument, people, little groups, families of people reading it, and now they get to see the monument. We made a statement that this temple is here to stay. I oftentimes think, I remember one devotee telling me that in the business world, that if you want to have something successful, there's three very important things that you have to have for them. Location, location, location. Right? Yeah. In the business world, this is, isn't it? Very popular saying. Three most important things required. Location, location, location. Now, what have we got here? We've got location, location, location. We've got people all the time walking up and down Commonwealth Avenue. I'm sure people are going to walk across the street when they see this monument. They're going to need it. And not only that, as I said, we've made a statement that this location, of course, we wanted the monument at Commonwealth Pier, but they said, sorry, no, it's not. They wouldn't allow us to put it there. So then the next step was here. So if anybody has some ideas that this temple's going someplace, I hope you don't have any ideas anymore. Because you just established a very strong message. And when you think about it, and if you make this, people who are going to stop are going to read the monument, and they're going to look at it, going to talk about it, and if you make it so very inviting, it could actually become a very inviting place where people will want to come find out more about what they saw on the monument. Before we used to just have a little plaque there with, come Wednesday night lectures, Bhagavad Gita as it is, or something. But look at this, monument is going to really, what to speak of, as far as I understand, the city of Boston is a very historical city, and if the devotees actually put some effort in establishing this monument in many of the brochures, and many of the, where's Boston, I know it used to be over here on, I don't know if it's still there. I remember Where's Boston? They used to have a little video for people, tourists coming to Boston, and the devotees were in the video. Hare Krishna. I don't know if Where's Boston is there anymore. I remember this from 40 years ago, 35 years ago, whatever it was. But if the devotees actually make some effort to when people are going down Commonwealth Avenue, they say, oh, we got to go across the street. There's a monument there of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and they'll go there, and you have this wonderful, inviting atmosphere in the front of the temple, and a wonderful, inviting lobby for people to come in, and a beautiful temple, and somebody answers the doorbell, and... I mean, imagine. Just imagine. Try to envision. Try to envision how we could popularize Srila Prabhupada and the statement we just made today. And many of you could all be a part of it. Could all become a part of it. This is, Prabhupada was, this is not even thinking big. I mean, Prabhupada didn't think big, but this is not even thinking big. This is just thinking logical. Logical. What we've done, we made a statement. We're not going to move the monument, I hope, to put it someplace, you know, way out in the nowhere world. Nobody's going to see it. Location, location, location. This is a place where people should come to find out about Srila Prabhupada's journey to the West and what he did and what he accomplished and why he was successful. This is what we should try to embody, commemorate today in the establishment of this monument, and I pray that I was able to somehow inculcate Srila Prabhupada's words to all of you, and thank you for this opportunity. I think others are going to speak a little bit, but I do have to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.